all know that I really appreciate the opportunity, but I appreciate maybe more than the opportunity, just your participation, your help throughout this week, your encouraging words. And, you know, when I've asked questions, you've answered them. It seems like you've been eager to answer them. And so I've tried to ask a few every night and not been short on answers any of the nights we've been talking together. And I appreciate so much this congregation. I don't really know if I have much time to say this at the end, so I just want to say it now. I really appreciate this congregation. You kind of gave me my first crack at things, I guess you might say. This wasn't the first place I ever preached, but this is the first place I learned how to preach. And then this week is my first time to ever do anything that went beyond just one sermon or maybe two sermon things. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here for the VBS and to be able to preach here every night. And my voice is actually held up, and I was kind of worried about that, and I was worried how just I would hold up. But, you know, I didn't pass out Sunday morning, so I figured I'd be all right for the rest of the week after getting back from Israel. So anyway, but tonight, I know that what we're supposed to be talking about is thankfulness and gratitude and everything. But I think one of the more important things we can talk about is just the finally they're entering the land. I mean, let's just focus on that for a little while before we get to the thankfulness of it. Let's just focus on how they get to the land. And I have quite a few pictures to show you because as I was reading over it and I was doing some research, I started realizing that some of the same things that we're going to read about, the same places, I was able to see. And it really helps, or it's helped me, and I hope that maybe I can convey in a way that helps you understand how thankful we ought to be, how thankful they ought to be to God. This is a great thing he's going to do in Joshua 3 and 4. As they're going to cross the Red Sea. They've already done that. It seems like that, you know, this thing is not as big as the Red Sea. It's going to be the Jordan River. But, you know, there's still it's still a big river. If you go over there today, it's not going to look the same as it did then. And we'll get into that in a second. So, Joshua chapter 3. If you remember in Joshua chapter 2, what has just happened is they've gone to spy out the land. Not as much land as they did the first time. They just went into this little area. They went into Jericho. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, no, they're spying out the land again. This didn't turn out right the first time. This time's different. And I'm sure you remember Rahab. I'm not going to treat you like kids. I'm sure you remember that Rahab the harlot was the one that hid them, hid these spies. And not only did she hide them, but do you remember after she, I guess, let them out of the window, she told them to go up to the hill country and wait a little while until it was safe. Wait until the coast is clear, and then come down, and then they can go on and rejoin all the Israelites across the Jordan. Let's begin in Joshua 2, just for a second. I want to read a few verses real quick, and then we'll get into the lesson. Let's look at verse number 20. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be free from the oath which you have made us swear. She said, according to your word, so be it. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. They departed and came to the hill country and remained there for 3 days until the pursuers returned. Now the pursuers had sought them all along the road, but had not found them. Then the two men returned and came down from the hill country and crossed over and came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and they related to him all that had happened to them. They said to Joshua, surely the Lord has given all the land into our hands. Moreover, all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before us. So, first off, what I want to show you is, as we're starting, it's entering the land. But I want you to appreciate that this is not just, oh, they get to go in the land. Finally, they get to go. Finally, it's about time. Wow, it's been forever, okay? There's been a lot of people die. There's none of the leaders except for Joshua and Caleb are left. I mean, Moses has just died, and now Joshua's the leader, and he died. The closest he got was to be on Mount Nebo and look over and see. I pictured that in a second. And you'll see that, you know, it's pretty far away still. I mean, you can make out some things, but man, he's so far away. Finally, the children of Israel are able to take their land. This is their land. Remember back two nights ago, it was said to them that this is the land he has given them. It is as if it had already happened. Now it actually comes to fruition. But you know what? There is a river in the way. And we're not talking a little stream, a creek, you know, just something to skip across. A river, a massive river is in their way. But it's okay. They've been through it before. You would think that they would have the faith, and it seems like they do have the faith they need to have in God. So this is from standing on top of Jericho, and there's going to be a couple bugs. I don't know how they got on the lens, but they did get on the lens. Just ignore them. This is on top of Jericho, And this is kind of from the backdrop of Jericho, from right to left. This is the mountains. This is the hill country that they're talking about. And as it was described to us, as it was described to me at least, I thought, wow, this is exactly as we're reading it in Joshua 2. They went up on the hill country, so maybe it was there. Maybe it was there. They didn't have the cable cars, but maybe it was there. Or maybe it was on this side. But this is the hill country that is behind Jericho. Another interesting thing that happened here, and more than likely it was maybe back in there, that area, this area. Do you remember a time when Jesus was being tempted and Satan took him up on a mount? They believe this was the mount. It's interesting to see how many different things happened in the same areas over time, over and over again. This was truly the promised land. This was, as it's called, the holy land. There's amazing things that happen. It's the Bible land, is how maybe we would feel more comfortable calling it. Because everything we read about in here, it's happening all in this area. Not right in Jericho, but it's happening all in this area. Now, why do you think that he might have gone up and showed him this land? Let's say this is the mountain, and this is the land that you will have. This is what you will have. This is where everything began. This is when they finally were able to enter the land. And he's saying, this is with all be yours, everything you see. So then you also, from the top of these mountains, you're able to see quite a bit. And here's some other pictures just from, I know this is going to be a little bit chaotic maybe, but these are the pictures I could take from Jericho that actually made any sense. Top left would have been a Canaanite gate, possibly. This would have been what they entered into the city. Every city had a passageway, right? This would have been the passageway. And if you look on the next couple, really, I guess the second, third, and then drop down one, this is kind of the best I could see as far as what they would have walked around when they came up to Jericho. This is, from what I remember, this is old Jericho. There was a New Testament Jericho. And so here's just some things. And if you look at this bottom one right here, this one right here, and then this is kind of the enhanced version. Those are original bricks from a wall, from a building, something like that. This place existed. The place they came up to, the place where they were hid by Rahab the harlot, the place that they took, the place that God promised them, it was real. And it's still there. I mean, maybe not in its fullness, maybe not that it looked the exact same, but it's there. And we're able to go see that, and you're able to maybe stand back and you're able to see that surely the Lord has given all the land into our hands. Surely it has happened. And we can go back and we see it today. Surely it did happen. It's real. That helps me. Because as we read through these stories, sometimes they just seem like stories. You know, I remember my granddad telling me a lot of stories, and they seemed real when I was a kid. So we read about Rahab the harlot. We read about them crossing the Jordan. We read about all these different things. And they're not just stories. They're real. Now let's read Joshua chapter 3 before we get in and look at a little bit more of the landscape. Joshua 3, beginning of verse 1. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and he and all the sons of Israel set out from Shittim to came to the Jordan, and they lodged there before they crossed. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the midst of the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, "When you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God with the Levitical priests carrying it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. However, there shall be between you and it a distance of about 2,000 cubits by measure. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you should go, for you have passed, for you have not passed this way before." Why? What is the importance of the ark? What is the importance of the ark going before them or even being in their presence? There's God. I mean, maybe not literally, that you can see his outline or anything, you can see his shadow, but that's what it meant. And so in battle, God's there. That means the presence of God, there's confidence you can take from that. So right here, as they're going to enter into the land, he's saying, let the ark go in front, okay? It's going to go before you. Don't go near it. You don't have the right to go near it because you can't be that close to the presence of God, really, is what it comes down to, it seems to me. But also, there's another reason. Because don't run ahead. Don't think you can just go on. Don't follow too close. Wait and see where the ark goes because that's the way you need to follow. This is a picture also looking at Jericho, and I know it's difficult to see, but from here you can see a little bit to the right, there's actually what looks like the Dead Sea, and then the Jordan's going right there in the middle. And you're not able to see, but those are the mountains that they actually come over. I messed with the picture a little bit, and you see, if you see in the distance, those are the mountains. If you see kind of in the middle, a little bit to the left, a little dark area at the top of what looks like the mountain ridge, that's Mount Nebo. That's Mount Nebo right there. And we've got another picture, but I just want you to understand that that's the mountains they come over. That's the wilderness they've been walking in for a little while. This is not the wilderness they wandered in, but this is, they come over the mountain. There's the wilderness. There's the Jordan. It's hard to see from right here, but you know what? This is what's on top of Mount Nebo. If you see in the middle of the screen, that green patch, that's Jericho. Can you imagine when you top the mountain? Have you ever, I guess you're close to home, and all of a sudden you top the mountain, you've been away for a while, and you say, there it is, home sweet home. But the interesting thing is they hadn't been there, but you know they had to be feeling that. Egypt wasn't home sweet home. I hope they understood that by now. The wilderness wasn't home sweet home. You hope that as they look over and they see, that's home. That's where we're supposed to be. That's where God planned for us to be many years ago. Let's go take it. And they pretty much do. They pretty much do. So that's Joshua. That's Joshua chapter 3. As they're preparing to take Jericho. But like I said, this river's in the way. That is the Jordan River currently. It is nasty. And when I say nasty, I mean gross. Now, I'm not just like, you might not want to get in. I didn't touch it because they said, we have hand sanitizer if you want to touch it. And I said, no, then I don't want to touch it because I don't want anything that has going on. The sad thing is, that is nothing what it would look like back then. That is nothing what it would look like. This is the area that they believe, somewhere around here, where they would have crossed. It's also the area that they believe that Jesus was baptized by John. Interesting, again, how things overlap like that. So this is a view from the Jordanian side. Obviously, I was not over there because I'd have been arrested probably. But this is the view that where we were. Now, I want you to look at the wall up there because this next picture is going to be a picture that shows where the line on the wall came to where the Jordan River was last year in January. Look how high up on the wall that is. So let's go back real quick. Look how low and look how high on the wall it is. It's right towards the top. Now, how does that happen? It's the rainy season. The rainy season for these people, over there in Israel, is somewhere from, I guess, our months have been October through April. Now, let's look over in Joshua chapter 4. Joshua chapter 4. Joshua 4, look at verse 19. Now, the people came up from Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. When they crossed over, now this would not have been our January, this would have been around our March. Right at the end, right as they're finishing up with the rainy season, is when this would have been crossing. So imagine how much higher the river would have been at that time. This was rushing water. This is a massive body of water. The Red Sea was intimidating and scary, but this is pretty intimidating and scary as well. That's what it looked like in 1935. Can you even make out what the differences in land and water there, really? Look how huge of a body of water this was just, 80 years ago? 80 years ago, I guess? That's how much it shrunk. So if that's what it was 80 years ago, imagine what it was like thousands of years ago. Just imagine before they started diverting it even more and even more. Now, I bring all this up not just so that we can have some sort of history lesson or so I can show off pictures, but I want us to appreciate that this was no easy thing for the Israelites to understand how they were going to cross this. In fact, if you think about it, this would have been the most difficult time God could have chosen for them to cross over. This was during the rainy season. Why now? He could have waited a few months. He could have waited 3 months, and then it would have died down quite a bit. Why? What is one of the things that has been said throughout this whole week that God was doing? He was doing what? Testing? What else? Showing his power. Showing his power. I do think there's a test for the Israelites, but what God is doing for himself is he is proving who he is. He will be glorified. He will be glorified as they pass through the water of the Red Sea. He will be glorified as they praise him for the waters that they were turned sweet from bitter. He will be glorified as they go in and spy out the land and they see it is exactly as he said it would be. He will be glorified in the fact that this was the most inopportune time for them to cross over the Jordan River, and yet that's when he wants them to do it. So application for us might be that God can do things, and God can do wonders in our lives, not miracles necessarily. He can do wonders seemingly in our lives when we don't believe it's possible. Have you ever come across someone that you just know, man, they're so close. They're so close to the truth. Well, that'd be amazing, and we would rejoice if they would actually come to the truth. But have you ever been around someone that's a worthless person that you know there could not be anything, they could not be further from the truth? They don't even want to know God. God can do amazing things in people's lives. The most inopportune, the thing that makes the least sense to us is when God can act and have amazing wonders in our lives. Also, have you ever had something in front of you that seemed to be, this, why would God put this in front of me? This is the worst thing. This is the worst possible circumstance. I just got through something that was difficult. So maybe you lose a job and then something bad happens in your family. You're rocked. That's what you've been counting on. Or something bad happens in your family, and so you turn to your job and then something bad happens in your job. Trust in God. Have faith in Him. Because He can do amazing things when it seems like it's impossible. Because when it's the most inopportune time, that's when God can be glorified. If only we turn to Him and thank Him and glorify Him. Then we can turn around and be an example to so many people. I know people whose lives have been wrecked. And you know what they are able to do? They are able to share with other people how it's going to be okay. God's still there for you. You think God's glorified by that? I truly believe so. What's the purpose of our shining our lights? So that God is glorified. That's what Matthew teaches us. So that's the first application point from tonight is this was the most inopportune time. I know it didn't look like this, but it's probably worse than that. It's probably scarier than that. And you know what? That's when God chose for His people to cross to go take the land. So what is it? Whatever it is in our lives, whoever we come in contact with, that seems like they're just not ready. Maybe they are. Because God will be glorified. God will be glorified in our age, just like He was in theirs. But He has to have people that glorify Him. He has to have people that live for Him, that trust in Him, that thank Him. So that's the picture of 1935. You have the picture of modern day. You have the picture where it was, I guess, the line from last year. Just try to picture what this looks like. We're not talking about coming across what's the river around here that we all go canoeing and everything. Duck River. We're not talking about the Duck River, I don't think, here, okay? This is going to be a little bit bigger. This is going to be a little more rapid, I would think. You got to think about it. This is running a long way. This is going all the way from past the Sea of Galilee on down to the Dead Sea. There's a lot of force behind this. There's a lot of movement in this body of water. And then, just to kind of show you a little bit of where we were. So where that was, what I showed you as far as where we came across the Jordan, we came up to the Jordan. It's called Kasr al-Yahud. Look how close it is to Jericho. That really might have been very close to the place they would have crossed. They had Gilgal first, and then they went over to Jericho. So finally they're able to enter the land. So let's read a few more verses, and then we'll make some application points. Let's look in Joshua chapter 3, and let's look at verse number 5. Joshua 3, verse 5. Then Joshua said to the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you." There's that word we've been saying, wonders, amazing things God will do. And Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over ahead of the people." So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went ahead of the people. Wow, they're actually following what he's saying. Let's just take note of that and be appreciative that they're actually doing what they're told to do, finally. Now let's go down a little bit more. Now the Lord said to Joshua, verse 7, "This day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. You shall, moreover, command the priests who are carrying the Ark of the Covenant, saying, 'When you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan.' Then Joshua said to the sons of Israel, 'Come here and hear the words of the Lord your God.' Joshua said, 'By this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that He will assuredly dispossess from before you the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Hivite, the Perizzite, the Girgashite, the Amorite, the Jebusite.'" Do you remember the list of people that they said that they were scared of when they entered the land? It was the children of Anak. It was the Jebusites. It was all these other people. And here, he doesn't list the exact same ones. He actually lists a few that they didn't list. And he's saying, all these people, I'm going to dispossess them. They're going to be driven out of the land. There is nothing. You ever come across an anthill and you just know that you can do some damage to the anthill and there's nothing they can do? Except maybe you, as long as you run away. You know, that's kind of what this is like. It's like, these are just little ants, okay? Now, maybe they can kind of do a little bit of damage, but they can't do anything to you. And then they're so small. Do you remember the thing that they thought about themselves? The children of Israel thought they were as grasshoppers in their own sight and in other people's sight. And what I see God saying here is, no, they're the grasshoppers. They're the tiny little insects, and I'm going to stomp them for you because you're my people. Now, let's continue a little bit more. Let's look down to verse 13.
It shall come about when the soles of the feet of the priests who carry the ark of the Lord, the Lord of all the earth, rest in the waters of the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan will be cut off, and the waters which are flowing down from above will stand in one heap. So this is proclaimed that all they're going to have to do, the people that are carrying the ark, their souls touch the water, and what happens? The water shoots away. Shoots away. And the same thing that was said about the Red Sea is going to be said about this, that they're going to walk as if it is dry ground. Again, so much purity there. So much amazing things that God is able to do just to say, it's as if there was nothing there. That was not even in your path because you actually did what he said, because you had faith, because you trusted in the Lord. And it's the same for us. Whatever's in our path, whatever seems to be in our way from getting in the promised land, getting to heaven, if we trust in God, it's as if it's not even there. If we put faith in him and follow his word, it's as if it wasn't even there. That doesn't mean it doesn't leave scars on our lives, but we just know that scar means nothing, that it will go away with our body. We've got to have trust in God, though. I'll read a few more verses, and then we'll make some more application points. Verse 14, so when the people set out from their tents to cross the Jordan with the priest carrying the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and when those who carried the Ark came into the Jordan, and the feet of the priest carrying the Ark were dipped in the edge of the water, the waters which were flowing down from above stood and rose up in one heap, a great distance away at Adam. I read somewhere that could have been 14 miles away. 14 miles away. That's amazing. But you have to think how many people are coming into the crossing this river. You know, you think they're going to do a single file line? This is a massive group of people with possessions, with all these things with them. We know that there's a few groups of people, and it says the men that were fighting were 40,000. And that's just a sampling of how many people are here. They needed all this space, maybe not 14 miles, but they needed this space to cross the Jordan, to cross this river. And the priest, verse 17, who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan, while all Israel crossed on dry ground until all the nation had finished crossing the Jordan. So like we said earlier, this was not the easiest time to cross, but it was when God chose for them to cross, to prove his glory, maybe to test them as well, to test them. Here, it seems to me they pass every test, and it's about time. It's about time they pass a test. It's about time they actually do. If you notice, he says, this is what they shall do. The priests will do this, the people will do this, and then they do it. It's amazing. And so for us, it seems kind of silly how we read things, or I read things, and I think, well, maybe that's not exactly how it needs to be. Maybe that's not exactly how I need to be. Maybe I don't have to confess. Maybe I don't have to really repent. Maybe I don't have to stop doing this or that. Well, then, can I expect to enter the promised land if I act like those Israelites who had to wander for 40 years in the wilderness? No. I can't expect to cross the Jordan, to actually go into the promised land if I act like these Israelites do. But they actually do what God says and have faith in him. Let's go on to chapter 4 and read a couple of verses here. Chapter 4. Because one phrase that I want to notice is in verse 10. If you skip down to verse number 9, then Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing, and they are there to this day. For the priests who carried the Ark were standing in the middle of the Jordan until everything was completed that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people hurried and crossed. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Sometimes when we feel like we are on our journey to the promised land, there's days where we don't want to hurry and cross. We get a little bit content with where we are. There's a song that came to my mind, and I remember someone who I love dearly saying that it was uncomfortable for a while for her to sing the song. She wasn't sure she really believed it. I can't feel at home in this world anymore. I can't feel a home in this world anymore. Can you say that? Is that true for you? If it's true, you'll hurry and cross. That doesn't mean you want your life to end. You're like, oh, I just don't want to live anymore. It means that you're ready, and it means if that does come, then you're perfectly fine with it. You are more than ready to go. Because I can't feel a home in this world anymore. There are people without a home. We are sojourners. We are people without homes. But yet we get very comfortable in this life. And we really make some good homes. Please understand they are perishing. They are passing away. They will not last forever. And if you plan on them lasting forever, you're just like the people that Jesus talked about in the Sermon on the Mount, where he said, you're laying up treasures on earth rather than in heaven. For where your heart is, there your treasure is. You lay up treasure on this earth because you're making a great home comfortable for your family, which there's nothing wrong with wanting your family to be comfortable. But if you pour your heart and soul, and that is everything to you, that is where your treasure is. And that treasure will rust and it will decay. And it will be no more one day. Because this earth will burn up. And if they wanted to stay in the wilderness, then they could. If they wanted to go back to Egypt, they could. But they weren't going to have a home anymore. They weren't going to have a home to call their own. And we won't either. As much as we feel like we're at home, we won't have a home in the end. And lastly, another point, is that this took great patience and perseverance. Who do you think it took great patience and perseverance from? Besides God. How about the priests? You notice how long they had to stand in the Jordan? They were there for what seems to be a very long time. Let's look at a few of these verses. Verse number 17 of chapter 3. So it starts there, verse number 17 of chapter 3, where they're waiting. And the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan. So they're standing firm there. Now let's go over to chapter 4. Look at verse number 2. Take for yourself 12 men from the people, one from each tribe, and command them, saying, take up for yourselves 12 stones from out of here in the middle of the Jordan. You know why they're having them do that? If you look at a little bit, not why they're having them do that, but while they're doing that, the priests are still standing there in the middle of the Jordan. Look down to verse number 5. And Joshua said to them, cross again to the ark of the Lord your God in the middle of the Jordan. So the ark's still there. The people and the priests are still standing there holding it. And then look down to verse number 9. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing. That was currently. They're still standing there. I don't know how long this took, but it seems like a very long time. Do you like standing for a very long time? After 2 songs, you're ready to sit down, right? It depends on how many verses we sing. Think of having to hold this up. Think of having to stand there. Sure it was dry ground. So their feet weren't stinking. Hopefully they weren't stinking either. They weren't sinking into the ground. It wasn't cold or anything like that, I don't guess. But still, they're standing there for so long. And what about us? Do you feel like sometimes your patience, your perseverance wears out because you are holding a burden that seems so difficult as you're on your journey? Now, maybe we're not carrying the Ark of the Covenant or anything like that. Maybe we feel like we're standing alone instead of having other priests around us. Understand that although Jesus says he will take our burdens, come to him if you're heavy laden, he will give you rest. At the same time, doesn't Galatians 6 also teach us that we are to bear one another's burdens? We have burdens, we have labors, we have trials and tribulations. It gets hard to stand. And what Paul is telling the Galatians is that's why you have one another. First and foremost, you have Jesus. But we also have one another. It wasn't just one priest who was standing out there alone. I'm not saying he couldn't have done it by himself. I think God could have empowered him to. He has his strength to. But we're not at this alone. Even if we're in a country where we feel like we're alone, we're not at it alone. We have brethren. And even if we feel like we don't have brethren because they deceived us and they betrayed us, we have Jesus. He is there to keep us strong. So we can persevere. We can, as people are going around us doing all this stuff and we just feel like we're getting tired and weary, we still have Christ and we still have our brethren. But we got to call on them sometimes. James 5 is pretty clear about that. There's a time where we call on our brethren to pray for us. We call on the elders to pray for us. We confess our sins to one another. Why? Because sometimes it gets hard to stand alone, so we just fall. We just sit down. I'm tired of standing in the middle of the Jordan River. I'm just going to sit. Well, you're going to be washed away. We have to make sure we call on him. We have to make sure we call on our brethren. That is the plan. That is what God would have us to do. So let's wrap this up with a few points. To enter the land, God must lead. The ark went first. The ark went ahead. And why? He says that you may know that the way by which you should go. You can't know the way. Do you remember Monday night? God's path. You can't know the way if God doesn't show it. God has shown us his path. He has revealed that to us, and now we can go on. Now we can go on, and we can know that our steps are sure. We're walking on dry ground, and it's going to lead to the promised land. For you have not passed this way before. We are in uncharted territory at times in our lives. And the only thing we're going to know to do, the only person we're going to be able to turn to is God. I can't turn to my brother or sister all the time. I have to turn to God first. He will lead the way. His presence needs to go before us. Secondly, they have to cross the river first. They have to cross it. So what are they going to do? Well, if you were there, what would you do? Would you pout? Would you get frustrated with Joshua? For the first time, we don't see them do that. That's the amazing thing. That's impressive. Why? Maybe they learned their lesson. Hadn't they just seen their fathers and grandfathers and so many people they love not be able to come over? They've all died out there in the wilderness. And how many of us have seen people that have gone on before, and yet we bicker, we moan, we get mad and frustrated? Why? Because we're not thankful that we're able to cross over. We're not thankful for where we are, that God is empowering us to actually go into the land. Thirdly, we need to remember what God has done. And so Joshua 4:6, this is the, you know, if we sing a song, "Here I Raise My Ebenezer." This is the same thing, a stone of remembrance, right? So what do these stones mean to you? That's what the children are going to ask in Joshua 4:6. What do these stones mean to you, Dad, Mom? The angels say to them, because of the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Because God stopped the waters. God stopped the waters that were intimidating us, that were in our way. He stopped those waters. But then there was another reason that they were going to set up another set of stones. And so when your children ask, what are these stones? What are these doing here? Then you shall inform your children, saying, Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. Not only did he stop the waters and allowed us to go over, but he made it as if it was that easy. It was a dry ground. And that's the same thing we need to pass on to other people, to our children first and foremost, just like they did. That crossing over into the promised land, there is going to be a river in front of us. But, you know, by God's help, he has stopped the waters and we are able to pass through it. Sin stood in our way, but no more. And we are white as snow, as if it's on dry ground, pure. Thanks be to God that we are able to do that, though. We cannot do that alone. We have to let our kids know that. We have to let other people know that. Fourthly, did you know that we're not there yet? You know, they weren't there yet either. They crossed over. They're standing there. They're setting up these stones. They're setting up these memorials, if you will. But they're not there yet. They haven't taken the land. And neither have we. No matter how old we feel, we're not there yet. No matter what all we've been through, we're not there yet. No matter how much we want to be there, we're not there yet. Seems pretty clear that Paul of Philippians wanted to be home, wanted to be in heaven. He wasn't there yet, though. So whether he was to go or stay, what was his goal? To please God. To do what God would have him to do. And that needs to be ours. No matter if we're ready or not. No matter if we feel like we're ready or not. Always focus on doing what God would have us to do. And you know what? We will actually enter into the promised land. And that is an amazing sight. That is an amazing thought. I really cannot fathom it. I know that maybe it's not going to have pearly gates necessarily. I'm fine if it does. I know the streets might not be laid with gold. But you know, if it is, that's fine. I don't care if it's silver, gold, bronze, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I don't know what it's going to look like. I just want to see it. They weren't there. Neither are we. But there's that motivation to see it, that drive, actually push us to walk the path that God would have us walk. Does it cause us to lean on him for strength? Does it cause us to actually follow after the leaders we need to follow instead of having pride in our hearts and fear? Kind of wrapping up all the things we've talked about this week, isn't it? And as I was reading through and I saw in Joshua 3:7, one of the things he said is, God said, I'm going to begin to exalt you this day. That day he was going to begin to exalt him. But he was already the leader, wasn't he? He was already going to do so much. That was just the beginning for him because they weren't in the promised land yet. Acts 1, 1-2, Luke writes, I wrote to you in the previous account, O Theophilus, of all that Jesus began to do and teach. Jesus has ascended into heaven, but you know what? He hasn't come back yet to lead us home. It's just what he began to do, just like with Joshua. It was just what he began to do because they weren't there. He hadn't led his people into the land. It's the same with Jesus. He has not led us into the land yet, but he will. The story's not over. It's not written. There's not a the end. You know, we're probably way past the once upon a time, but we haven't gotten to the end yet. That's a beautiful thing to think about, that Jesus' work is not done yet. And we ought to be thankful for that, because that means he has had patience with us. He's been understanding towards us, shown mercy towards us. Because Ephesians 2, while we were yet dead in sin, God has made us alive. Joshua 4:24. This is at the end of, after they cross, they finally made it over, across the Jordan. They're technically in the promised land, but they have not yet taken any land for their own yet. That all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. It says verse 23, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed. If you want to know why, God has been gracious enough to give us a son, why he's been gracious enough to offer us redemption and forgiveness for our sins, it's the same reasons we see right here. Why does he offer that us to offer that? Why does he offer up the gift of being able to be in heaven one day? Two reasons. So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the Lord of the hand is mighty. So that all people that we come in contact with will know that there is a God. And they will be able to sing the song with us because they know the power and his might. And the second reason is so that you, Christian, will fear the Lord your God forever. That's why we've been saved. That's why we are able to enter into the promised land one day. We have that hope within us, and we are to share that with others, and we are to have that within us, not just with a sigh of glee and rejoicing, but also with the understanding that we fear the Lord our God. That's what keeps us in the path. But we do walk around with thanksgiving and joy in our hearts continually. In a second, we're going to sing a song when Brother Arnie, well, you might not want me to call him that, when Doug led it the other day, I thought this would be a perfect way for us to together sing a song that says that we are going to stand firm, that we are going to enter the promised land. We're going to sing two verses, verses 1 and 3 of On Jordan's Stormy Banks, because I want us to sing that together, saying that we know we haven't crossed over in the promised land yet, but there is this river in front of us, life, and we will cross over. We're confident no matter what comes our way. So let's sing On Jordan's Stormy Banks, verses 1 through 3, and then we'll have an invitation. Believe that, though. That's why I wanted to sing that song, so that we can think about that. It helps me to think about songs throughout the day, throughout the hard times. And I want us to think about that when it seems like there's a big river in front of us that we can't jump over, skip over, whatever. And we're going to have to let God do the work and actually let us cross over. Like I said, that river is our life. Unfortunately, that's just what this life is filled with, is difficulties. But I hope that these lessons have been encouraging. I hope that maybe they've been informative in some way. But if nothing else, just a reminder that there is a home, there is a promised land, and that we will go there one day. Here's another thing just to think about. This is the closest Moses ever got to his promised land that God had promised to his people that he was leading. He was the leader of these people. He didn't get to actually see it, touch it, anything. He saw it from a distance. And we have to ask ourselves, or I want to ask you at least, how close are you going to get to the promised land? You going to get close where you can kind of get a feel for what it looks like? You going to get close to where you can peer in and then you can decide, no, that's not for me? You know, that's not really our choice. The sad part is God restricted Moses. How we live our life, the path we walk, the way we treat one another, the way we respond to God's commandments, the happiness we have, the thankfulness we have, the gratitude, everything, is going to impact how close we get. You know, this is as close, that's really, you might as well not even see it if you think about it. That's almost a tease, isn't it? There it is, but you can't go in. And I love this congregation. I love you all. And I just want to make sure that we offer up a chance that there will be nobody here. And I want you to make sure that there's nobody that you come in contact with that you love that will have to stand one day and not be able to go into the promised land. I want to go in. I want to see everyone here there. I want to see everyone in my life there. But I know that might not be the case. I have faith in God and I trust in Him that those who are righteous, those who are truly holy, those that are His will enter into the land because they're His children. Are you His child tonight? Are you His child? Have you started on that journey? Maybe you've been wondering for a little while. Well, stop wondering. Stop wondering in that wilderness of sin. Get back on that path. Cross that River Jordan or whatever might be in your path. And let's go to the promised land together. Don't be like Moses where all he was able to do is peer in and vaguely see something that looked like the presence of God. Let's go to heaven together. And I think that's the way that we need to think about this, is there's a promised land and we're going to go there together. And if you have anything in your life that stands in your way, whether that's you have not yet become a Christian, you need to repent of your sins, you need to be baptized. You know, we talked a lot about water and how water did not come over the children of Israel. But you know what? If you want to be a child of God, water's got to go over you. You have to be immersed in water. And if there's something in your life after you've done that you've really strayed from the path, you've not trusted in Him, what He said to do, you did not have faith in, you've not done it, won't you make that right? If you have a spiritual need, won't you come forward as we stand and as we sing?